This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 45, Darkman.
Darkman by Sam Raimi. This mm-hmm. one, this movie is written and directed by Sam Raimi, who we both admire greatly.
Yeah.
Not only that, it was produced by Robert Tappert, who produced Evil Dead. So it's basically the Evil Dead crew doing their own little version of a superhero movie. Now, I saw this movie back in 1990 when it first came out in the theaters. I remember seeing the trailers for it, and I'm like, oh, I've got to see this movie. I'm all over this movie. Now, 1 year prior, Batman came out, Tim Burton's Batman. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was a fucking sensation, as you guys. And I was there opening night for Batman.
Everyone wanted the shirt. It's just really iconic. Yep.
I was there opening night. I was praying, please let me get in. I mean, it's before, you know, the multiplexes with, like, you know, 18 different screens showing in. I stood in line for 4 hours. I got in. I saw it. I fucking loved it. You know, that summer of '89, I saw Batman 5 times in the theater. Okay, now, Darkman came out a year later, okay? I saw that in the theater as well. I absolutely loved it. Now, that was 1990, so now that's 25 years ago. In my opinion, Batman has declined, in my estimation.
Yeah.
And Darkman has just kept growing, growing, growing.
Yeah, for sure.
I keep revisiting this movie. I mean, I still have, I got my Blu-ray of Batman.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess maybe the Dark Knight and Nolan and so on, it was such a better take on Batman. But, I mean, every time I watch Darkman, I just it keeps, like, I have no desire really to see Burton's Batman again. Mm-hmm. But I keep watching, I keep revisiting Darkman over and over and over again, and I fucking love this movie. And when I revisited it in preparation for this podcast, I feel like I was 14 again. I love it. I absolutely love this movie. I mean, there are similarities to Batman. You got the great Danny Elfman score. Mm-hmm. You know, well, he scored Batman. You know, but this is its own sort of beast. Now, you mentioned you were sort of reticent to watch Darkman because you're not a fan of superhero movies.
Yeah, I don't like comic book-derived superhero movies just because it takes the suspense away from it when you have someone who's basically indestructible, with the exception of, well, your kryptonite and what have you. But it sort of removes any sort of drama when you have someone who's got just incredible powers. You can't be bested by any other mortal.
Okay,
and it just makes me indifferent. Although I did love the original Batman as well.
But the thing about Darkman, I mean, this there was no Darkman comic that this was
True.
This was, they actually did an adaptation of the movie. I think Marvel Comics put out an adaptation. I bought that, and I was.
And this thing for sure is not pandering to its audience.
Because
you know, if you see this thing to the end, there's no. Yeah, happy ending to this thing at all.
No, and we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. So, this movie stars Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
And this is before Liam Neeson became Liam
Neeson. Liam Neeson, yeah.
This is early in his career. Maybe, I think the year before, he was in the Dirty Harry sequel, The Deadpool, the last Dirty Harry movie, the one that put a nail in the coffin of that franchise. I loved it.
But featured Guns N' Roses.
And Jim Carrey, too.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson sporting a really ridiculous ponytail and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
He was not the first choice to play Dr. Peyton Westlake, i.e. Darkman. They considered many other actors. One was Bill Paxton. Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. But
not Bill Pullman, but
Bill Paxton. Yeah. But Drake felt, it's not Drake, sorry, Larry Drake is the movie we'll talk about after.
Yeah.
Raimi felt that Liam Neeson, there was this, he wanted to show, like, the soul of this monster slash hero, and he saw something in Liam. Of course, he's got the physically imposing presence.
Yeah,
and
he's 6'3", 6'4", yep. A big giant guy.
And also, there was something about the just, you know, there's some soul to him that he decided not to cast. Now, there's some other interesting casting news information I'll bring up later on, but
So Dr. Westlake is a plastic surgeon. And
well, yeah.
He's involved in, I guess, this sort of presaged the whole 3D printing movement that we have today, where he's involved in skin grafting and trying to develop parts for people who've...
He's trying to develop a synthetic skin, basically, that they can then use to affix to people who were involved in burns, fires, and so on and so forth. And he's working on this project, and he's having a lot of difficulty perfecting it because he can't get it stabilized.
And I guess the cells were only... I guess there's a famous... were the only, I guess... This is pretty bad science, but they only coalesce and generate for 99 minutes.
Yep.
And then they just
disintegrate.
Yeah, they just again, not really good science, but yeah, they disintegrate, so he can't, you know, perfect his grafting technique.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, Peyton Westlake has a girlfriend played by Frances McDormand.
Yes,
she plays Julie Hastings, and she's a lawyer. Now, before we get into her role in this movie, I want to say a couple things. Now, as you know, Frances McDormand is married to one of the Coen brothers, right?
Yes.
The Coen brothers actually helped Raimi write the script for this one. So they although they're not credited, they did work on the script. So, I mean, this is somewhat of a written by Coen brothers movie. Now, I got another little interesting fact for you. Frances McDormand was not the first... woman cast for the role of Julie. You know who was cast first? Julia Roberts.
Oh,
yeah. Oh. She was cast, and then what happened? She got the role in Pretty
Woman.
She
read the script and said, "This is too edgy and interesting. I'm going to have to pass."
Possibly, but okay. She actually ended up getting the role in Pretty Woman with the superstar. So she dropped out, and they got Frances McDormand instead. So it could have been Bill Paxton and Julia Roberts in Darkman. Thank God it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting age discrepancy, too. Frances McDormand being considerably older than Julia Roberts would have been at the time. But anyway, glad things turned out as they did.
Yep. So Frances McDormand, as I said before, plays an attorney named Julie Hastings. And she has a client by the name of Strack. And he's trying to develop a...
Yeah, a plot of land. Yeah, a city of the future, as we'll get to later.
And she finds this... memorandum called the Belisarius Memorandum, which indicates that...
There's some sort of zoning bylaw, sort of subterfuge and chicanery going on here. So, I guess there's a mob-related influence in how this plot of land is going to develop. And this is, I guess, common in the criminal underworld, which is indelibly tied to the construction industry and the development industry. Lots of...
Yeah.
You know, Italian mafia are involved in it.
At the time, I mean, Strack ostensibly has this competitor, a character by the name of Robert Durant. Now, this is not, and they called me Mr. Durant. Mr. Durant. This is not Durant from Street Trash.
Yeah.
And he's played by Larry Drake, right? Larry Drake, Dr. Giggles, right?
Yeah.
He also played a character on the television series L.A. Law. He played a mentally challenged person. But he's the mob boss in this movie, and what a character, what a performance!
Yeah, just a really giant, imposing kind of guy who strong arms people, and he's just really intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of henchmen, and he of course tries to, obviously he's run afoul of the Frances McDormand character, and he tries to intimidate her hubby. Obviously they can clear the way for his sleazy development.
Before we get to that, Durant, he's got a predilection for cutting off people's fingers.
Yes.
Using a cigar cutter.
Yeah.
that's his method of interrogation.
Yeah.
And he's got a bunch of goons, a great, colorful bunch of characters. One of them, Rick, played by Ted Raimi.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Raimi's brother, who appears in a lot of Raimi films.
Mm-hmm.
He has another one of his goons has a prosthetic leg, a wooden leg, which is also a machine gun.
Yeah,
that's great. So
he's the you know, he's the butt of jokes. He's, you know, did you hear about the guy with the, I forget the premise, but no, did you hear about the guy who dated the woman with the wooden leg? He had to break it off. Whatever. It's there's lots of great jokes at the expense of this guy and his wooden leg.
Yeah, so, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, fun stuff from Raimi and Ted, Sam and Ted.
So so there's this nefarious Belisarius memorandum, and she lets Strack know that she's in possession of this, and he's like, oh well, you know, let me just turn my head and it'll disappear, and she's like, well, I don't have it, it's a home and all.
Yeah.
And she lives with Westlake, and then what happens? He's there working in his lab, and
yeah, the henchmen come in and shake him down, and more so than that, they really beat the living shit out of this guy. They ram his head through glass. They drop him in acid.
Yep. They burn his hands beyond recognition.
Yeah.
They basically leave him. And then they blow up the lab.
Yeah, and they blow up the lab, and all his life's work is decimated, and he's sustained burns to, I guess, 40 to 50% of his body.
Well, he's presumed dead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, and that was a really cool, another thing we got to say about it. I mean, Raimi's, Sam Raimi's visual flair and trickery is all throughout this movie. I mean, it's just incredible, right?
Yeah.
If you like Evil Dead 1 and 2 and all those camera tricks, you're going to love this. And there's that scene where Frances McDormand is in her, wearing like a sort of like a black pantsuit, and she witnesses the lab exploding, and all of a sudden, like, the scene behind her goes to a cemetery.
Yeah.
And she's dressed in black, mourning Peyton Wesley.
Yeah, really, really cool cuts.
Yep, and they mention, well, they talk to the gravedigger, saying, oh, that was a pretty easy job. And he goes, well, all we found was a part of an ear. I mean, it was pretty easy to bury that, yeah. Right? But unbeknownst to everybody, Westlake survived.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, barely. Like he's sustained burns to 40, 50% of his body. He's undergoing this experimental treatment in the local hospital.
Yeah, they find him. They consider him a hobo. They call him John Doe.
Yeah, because they have no... but he does have teeth. Well, couldn't they have identified him through dental records? Okay, never mind.
Let's not go there. Don't start, you know, anyway.
But yeah, they enlist him to take part in this treatment where he's put on some sort of like... it's like an Iron Maiden kind of strange wheel.
Yeah,
and it turns him around.
Spun around.
And I guess to pool his blood circulatory system.
Yeah,
they don't really explain. You know, weird wheel.
Yeah, and there's some sort of like, this is all just to get the plot going, but whatever. Yeah. There's a doctor, and she's played by Jenny Agutter from Logan's Run. But anyway, she says.
Nice.
Yeah, so I mean, most people would be burned beyond recognition. Like this poor gentleman here, this John Doe. I mean, they'd be in excruciating pain. But we've severed his nerves, and we've injected him with this whatever.
What kind of life is that? You know, because he can't feel pain.
Right. So they said, he's impervious to pain. And but the compensation for that is that his body will experience tremendous spikes in adrenaline, aggression, anger, and strength.
Yeah. Here's your Deus Ex Machina. Here's your superhero stuff. It might as well be radiation.
And, speaking of heightened aggression, all of a sudden, Westlake breaks his bonds and...
escapes from the hospital.
And he's out there in the streets, and he's...
he's looking like the Invisible Man.
Well, he's, and that's the thing. He cuts an incredible figure because, he's tall.
Yeah.
He's got this bandaged face. He grabs this ratty trench coat. He puts it on.
Yeah.
He grabs his hat. All of a sudden, he's like a cross between like Phantom of the Opera.
I was going to say Lon Chaney. The Man of a Thousand Faces.
Yeah, like there's something very Chaney-esque about him.
Yeah.
He's like Phantom of the Opera crossed with the Invisible Man.
Crossed with like Frankenstein and Batman, whatever.
Oh, he just looks incredible. And I mean... What a figure he cuts. And I mean, you get the sense that Raimi is paying a lot of homage to these old Universal horror films that he loved, right? And he's basically just filled with rage and vengeance. He doesn't know, and he wants to,
Yeah, exact revenge. That's why this film becomes is a cross between a superhero film and a B revenge film.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to exact revenge on the people who put him in this predicament, and he goes after one of the goons named Paulie, and he's supposed to be involved in a money exchange with him. So as we said earlier, like Dr. Westlake is I don't know what the specialty would be. He's a plastic surgeon slash dermatologist slash genetics expert. He's still trying to perfect his skin.
And he undergoes, has
this machine to
create
grafts of
Faces, other faces,
including Polly the Goon, whose face he replicates, and he becomes Polly the Goon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so there, when Polly's meant to pick up the money and have a drop off because these guys are involved, obviously, in the criminal underworld, he becomes Polly and takes the money.
Mm-hmm.
And implicates him. So this becomes part of face-off.
Yeah.
With John Travolta.
And what does he do to Rick, Ted Raimi? I mean, remember when he's interrogating him and then he puts his head through a manhole in oncoming traffic?
Yeah.
And he gets run over.
Yeah.
This is not your virtuous superhero, like Superman, whatever. He's angry. He's out for vengeance. He's basically turning into a monster.
Yeah, he is. Assuming the identity of goons,
mm-hmm,
and killing them. And there's a great, as I said, he assumes the identity of Polly, who's one of the henchmen of this Robert Durant, Larry Drake character.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes him because by virtue of his skin grafting technology, which is, as we said before, only available for 99 minutes.
99 minutes. Yeah.
He becomes Polly. And there's a great falling death where he just throws Polly out a window, and this is just incredible.
Well, Durant throws Polly out the window, and so he falls into a car, and Neeson, or Darkman, as Polly, is sitting there on a park bench, and some woman sees the real Polly, and then she turns to the pseudo Polly,
yeah,
and she just like doesn't know what the hell's going on, and she screams. And I mean,
because he's become Polly, and obviously not doing the bidding of Robert Durant. Mm-hmm. So Robert Durant mistakes one Polly for another because obviously this is a recalcitrant, doing your bidding, Polly.
Mm-hmm. Now he throws him out the window. So I mean, he wants to get his life back, right? So he also creates synthetic skin of himself, his former self.
Yeah,
And he meets Julie, and
tries to chase her down, and of course she thinks he's dead.
But then she's like, "Oh, well, you're alive." He's like, no, I was in a coma, and she wants to sort of like pick things up where they left off. But obviously, Liam Neeson is very
he's got business to attend to.
Well, yeah, but also don't forget his face only lasts for 99 minutes, right?
If he could just keep redoing this graft, mm-hmm, so for 99 minute stints at a time, she could be with her beau. Why not? And then he has to go back to the lab. Mm-hmm. That's not so bad. Especially if, if she's working during the day, whatnot.
I guess.
But it's a little bit of an inconvenience.
Yeah, I would say so. But anyway, look, I mean, this is basically, as you said before, this is sort of like a B-vengeance film / superhero film. He's a dark superhero. It's kind of like man versus monster because as he's, his rage just keeps on consuming him.
And he keeps assuming the identity of these gangsters.
Yeah, but we got to talk, when he's Darkman, right? The makeup is incredible.
Yeah, the exposed teeth, the gauze,
the burnt visage. I mean, mm-hmm, there's only like a quarter of his face is actually his skin. It's incredible. And again, Neeson, I gotta say, his performance is a little on the hammy side, I would say.
Yeah, they make light of his Irish brogue,
mm-hmm,
and how it sort of when he's trying to do American accents, I'm thinking of The Family Guy, where his Irish brogue tends to,
it's got a bit of that.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I hear what you're saying, but his body language is so Chaney-esque. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something so like universal monster about him, and he's just like I said before. Like he's just the character of Darkman. When I was a 14-year-old kid, he just hypnotized me, and watching this movie again, it hypnotizes me. I fucking love it, and it eventually comes down to this huge battle between Darkman.
Yeah, Durant and Darkman.
Durant and Darkman.
And Durant has got a helicopter, this is ridiculous too because for some reason he's got a Gatling gun in the helicopter, and he's trying to chase after you know, dark man like he's Al Capone or something. So it speaks to, you know, it's kind of got a Dick Tracy sort of feel to it at this point, like a Gatling gun. This is meant to be the 90s, right? And when this came out, Gatling gun? What are you, like Bonnie and Clyde?
It's all good to me, man.
Yeah, no, no, it's still, yeah, it's got that aesthetic. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And he's chasing after him, and there's a great helicopter chase scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
where Darkman is hanging off
the helicopter, and there's
a winch and wire. And,
yeah, there's a winch, and then there's a cops and their helicopter involved chasing the gangster, and the gangster chasing Darkman. So that's a really great scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did a lot again with $8 million budget.
Yep, and you know, at the end of it all, I mean, you know, we're not gonna, like, okay, so who won, who lost? I mean, you can figure out for yourself, right?
Yeah.
At the end of it all, Julie wants to sort of reconcile with Darkman. He's like, I can't do it. I'm not like a man anymore. I'm a monster. And he runs away, and he puts on some synthetic skin, and he has this great line where he goes, I'm everyone.
Everyone and no one.
Yeah. I'm everywhere, but nowhere. Call me Darkman.
Yeah, it's almost like a godlike figure.
But he turns to the camera, and at this point, who's playing? Like, who's
Sam Raimi.
Yeah. No, Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell. Right. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
The great god Bruce Campbell from Evil Dead. And so, I don't know, like I said before, I mean, I think this movie's got some flaws. Yeah.
For sure, but it's still really...
It's a rip-roaring good time.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. What did you learn from Darkman?
I learned that you think you killed him, and he pops up somewhere else. So this is, again, like part mentioned Face-Off with John Travolta. This is someone who can... maybe a little bit about being John Malkovich. It's someone who can adopt the skin and the persona of another person, which makes for a really interesting conceit that's way more interesting than the usual superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy's a plastic surgeon / geneticist. And he can assume any identity. He's God, in a way. Well, he's everyone and he's no one.
Yeah, but he's everyone and he's no one. But what you didn't like about superhero movies and why you don't like to watch him is because you don't like these sort of invulnerable superheroes. But, I mean, Batman, he takes a bit of abuse.
He takes a lot of abuse, much more so than any Batman or Superman ever would.
Mm.
So that's what makes him so much more sympathetic. And there's a great, I got to say, in the finale of this thing, there's the city of the future. And, you know, there's just a great scene on top, high above, I think 700 feet, I guess he mentions,
mm-hmm.
atop these girders. It's sort of like that famous photograph that was taken when they were building, you know, lower Manhattan, and they have those workers sitting on that beam. And so this was, you know, so I'm not keen on heights, so watching this was pretty incredible as Darkman is fighting for his life at incredibly high heights. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, lots to commend this film for sure.
I learned that that there really is only one Darkman. That's Liam Neeson.
Mm-hmm.
They actually made two straight to video sequels to this movie.
Oh, yeah.
They were both shot in Toronto, I believe. And it's hilarious because, I mean, the original was shot in L.A., right? But they filmed the sequels back-to-back in Toronto, and in so many scenes you can see the CN Tower, and they're trying to pass it off as L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know? But anyhow, the second one was called The Return of Durant.
Okay.
And the third one was called Die, Darkman, Die. But the only principal that returned for the second one was Larry Drake as Durant, and there were no principals in the third one. They had another actor by the name of Arnold Vosloo, who is famous for the exorable Brett Ratner directed Brendan Fraser Mummy series. He played Darkman, and I, of course, loving the original, I watched both these sequels, and I maybe have to revisit them, because apparently a lot of people like the third one on IMDb. A lot of people are saying this is like the good sequel, but I don't know, man. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one Darkman.
Yeah,
that's Liam Neeson. I like Liam Neeson. I really do. I like the guy. I mean, you know, I'm not crazy about the umpteenth Taken sequel, but The Grey. Have you seen The Grey?
No.
That was a really cool existential sort of like man versus nature movie. I liked it. I like Liam. I really do.
I'm more partial to Ralph Fiennes, but Liam has his place. He's a pretty great actor himself.
What about that scene from Life is Short with have you seen that one?
No.
Oh, you got to check that on YouTube. That's Life is Short, the Gervais series.
Yeah, yeah.
With Warwick Davis.
you got to check out the scene of Liam Neeson in Life is Short. It's, okay. It's fucking hilarious. It might change your mind on Neeson. He kind of sends up his persona. It's really, really funny. But anyway, the other thing I learned too is, like, you know, again, like, you know, there's some directors out there that are just tremendous. You know, and Raimi is one of them. Mm-hmm. I love Sam Raimi. You know, again, you know, he's gotten a bit more mainstream with your Spider-Mans and whatnot, but I love
it. Yeah, that's actually the one superhero movie I can really take because of the stylistically. It's just, it's incredible. That's Sam Raimi's aesthetics.
Yeah, his, visually. I mean, he's one of the best. What about another movie of his I would highly recommend, which is so different for Sam Raimi because it's not a genre film, but it's a great movie. Have you seen A Simple Plan?
Yes, with Billy Bob.
Billy Bob.
Incredible
and
movie.
Yeah.
And that's a send-up sort of, well, a take of the B-movie classic double-crossing heist kind of movie. That was an incredible
amazing movie. Yeah. Amazing movie. An incredible performance of Billy Bob Thornton. So I guess the takeaway from this is that Raimi's amazing.
Yeah.
Watch Darkman.
Definitely.
Watch A Simple Plan. And another movie, which is in the Raimi family, although it's not directed by Raimi, but Robert Tappert, who's the producer, I believe, is the director, is Intruder.
Mm-hmm.
We really like that one, too.
Yeah, it's set in a grocery store with a sadistic killer. It's really incredibly well done.
And
blows a lot of these stalker slasher films right out of the water with its humor and incredible atmosphere.
And for those of you that are fans of Bruce Campbell, and really, who isn't a fan of Bruce Campbell, he makes about a 3-second cameo in Intruder for about the same amount of time that he's in Darkman.
In here.
So, another thing, too. Raimi wanted to cast Campbell as Darkman, but the studio said, nah. Not enough of a name. So.
Yeah.
Not that Liam Neeson was at the time, but still. Anyway, Darkman, love it.
A lot of it
for me is childhood nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna, you know, I overlook some of these flaws. I mean, you mentioned Dental Records. Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. Who cares, man? It's a live action comic book. I'm gonna give it 4 stars, man. What about you?
Yeah, the same. I don't have the same affinity for comic book films. A 3.5 for me, but if you're into comic book style movies, 4, 4.5 for sure. And for more, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com every Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we will talk to you soon. Thank you.